Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin. Well, not quite yet, Terry is coming back from holiday right now, but he will be along in the podcast very, very, very soon, because we've got a special treat for you for our first pod of the brand new season, season 16, Jan.
16, Graham.
16, I know. It's big numbers now, big number. And we're not like one of those podcasts that counts seasons whenever they take a break. They'll say they did two seasons of a podcast in one football season. I don't understand that at all.
Are they using the American use of the words season when what they mean is series?
Yeah.
Whereas we're using the football season.
Yeah, exactly.
Terminal. Yes. Okay. I get you. No, we're not one of those podcasts.
No. If you haven't listened to us before, welcome. If you haven't listened to us for a long time, welcome back. And if you've just popped in because you know Archie Rintat's going to be on here and you're a big fan, then welcome along as well. Well, I don't know when we're going to be dropping in. Probably very, very soon. Probably about 5-10 minutes. So you can probably scrub through the early part of me and Jan just like introducing everyone to the new season. Because that's what it is. It's a new season. This time of year is great, isn't it, Jan? I mean, we've had a long summer. I've been enjoying the Olympics. I know you haven't because you don't like running and jumping and all that sort of nonsense, do you? I love it.
I don't. It's racing, really, Graham. I just don't like racing. And then to try and make the racing more interesting, they start chucking stuff around. And I'm sorry. I've got no problem with people that enjoy a bit of track and field, but it's not for me, Graham.
Obviously, Jan has had a couple of weeks off sport. Probably not, because he's probably been scouring the paper for transfer news, haven't you? But there's not been that much of it around, has there, really? It's been relatively light. Of course, they're like, the usual suspects are dipping their hands into their pockets and pulling out money. But there's a lot of clubs that have done very, very little business so far. So it doesn't really bode well for discussion podcasts who want to talk about something before there's any football been played.
Or the red top newspapers who seem to fill their back pages with transfer gossip. But yeah, it's been quiet. I wonder, Graham, whether there's a bit of post-Euros going on there. Maybe people are watching the Olympics. And so maybe the rumours that would normally be in the newspapers aren't because of that. But I think in terms of the clubs, I'm wondering whether they've still got one eye on what happened with Everton and Forest last year, that everyone's just being very, very cautious with their spending. Although the third team that potentially is going to be involved in that is Chelsea. And I was just looking at their transfers and they seem to be anything but cautious. So Chelsea are still spending big. I was speaking to my Chelsea contact last night and he was telling me they've just bought a load of kids for flipping great wadges of cash. I mean, they're spending £20-30 million on players. Apparently, they're just not going to necessarily make it into the first team yet. I mean, to be honest with you, Graham, it wouldn't be a summer transfer window without Chelsea spending more than everybody else, would it? It just wouldn't feel right.
Certainly not. I think there would be something seriously wrong if they didn't spend any money. Either that or they would be under another transfer embargo. It's happened before and it'll happen again, I'm sure of it. But obviously as well, this summer compared to last summer we had all the Saudi spending and everyone going off to the Saudi Pro League. That doesn't seem to be the case this summer. Doesn't mean to say it's not going to happen, but that looks like that's quieting down a bit. But that was always going to be the case, wasn't it? That was like previously a few years back when the Chinese League were spending big and that was really just one or two transfer windows and then that quietened down really quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, and you know, there are players that are coming back. Most famously, last season was Jordan Henderson, who moved back to the Netherlands. He went to Ajax, didn't he?
I'm sure it was
Ajax. So yeah, maybe you know. I can understand players in the kind of the sunset of their careers going over there because they get a massive payday. Players that have gone over sooner than that, I think, is a bit strange. And I suppose as well, culturally, for young lads, and if they've got their partners with them, then it can be, I would imagine, a difficult culture to acclimatise to, and not just the weather as well. But, you know, it's not, I mean, it's probably, I'm sure it is well watched across Saudi Arabia, but obviously it's not really watched here, is it, for obvious reasons?
No, not at all. So we haven't had that outlier this summer. So there really isn't that much to talk about, really, as far as the transfers are concerned. Some are starting to come through now. I know United are meant to be sealing the signing of De Ligt and Mazraoui from Bayern today. I think they are having their medicals as we speak, I think. But Liverpool have yet to sign anyone so far. I think Arsenal have made only one big signing. It's one in, one out for them, I think, really, as far as key signings. But there are, it's still question marks over a lot of individuals, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not worth us getting bogged down in trying to speculate where things are going, because you know what happens is, you know, we say something here, and then between the time when we pat ourselves on the back and say, job well done, lads, and then when we actually go through the whole process of editing it and then putting it out, something happens, doesn't it? Someone makes a decision, don't they? And this is what happened on the final episode of our Euros coverage, didn't it? Where Gareth Southgate decided to say, right, no, that's it. I'm done with the England job, and walked out after... What, we spent half an hour talking about whether he should stay or go or not.
Yeah, and the consensus was he should stay.
Yes.
So I'm wondering whether if we'd recorded that 24 hours earlier, then the whole picture would look very different, because I'm sure he would have been listening to our hot takes on why he should stay with England.
Yes, but he didn't, did he? And so Terry and I had to get together quickly on the following day. Though unfortunately, we couldn't organise it so that we could rope Jan in for his opinions on there for a very, very quick reaction, 5 minutes. But now we've had a month to think about it. What do you think now, Jan? Do you think it was the right time for him to go?
Well, I mean, it's clearly a very personal decision. I mean, from an England supporter's point of view, without reiterating what I said on the pod last time, his record is, I mean, he did everything but win it.
Yeah.
His record was brilliant. He really turned England a proper fighting force, if you like. But he went through a roller coaster across the Euros as well, wasn't he? Because during some of the uninspiring performances, he received some, terrible criticism across social media and in the press, saying that, he needs to go. And then everyone's singing his name by the end of it because England make the final. So I would imagine that's a difficult thing for him to go through. And he has been there for a long time. So I would imagine he probably just wants to go, look, I probably don't need this. And as well as that, he's a professional sports coach. So why wouldn't he want to look at new challenges? So I can understand why he did it. A bit disappointed, but yeah, understandable.
Yeah, and now Lee Carsley is in the hot seat for the moment anyway. He's been put in caretaker charge of England for now. And we've got some Nations League coming up in the autumn. That's hardly ideal of not having a permanent guy in place, but maybe Carsley will get it. Maybe it would just be exactly the same as it was when Southgate got the job. I mean, he's done great things with the under-21s, won the under-21s Euros last year.
Yeah.
So maybe keep him in place there. Maybe this Nations League round is a good one. We are at a lower level in this round of the Nations League, so we would be playing the non-top teams in that. But if he does well, then that should be something that the powers that be should take note of.
You're right, he did really well with the England under-21s. I mean, aside from winning the Euros, I mean, I do like a stat, Graham, and his win percentage was just shy of 80% for England under-21s. I mean, it's just crazy. So you're right. I mean, the great thing about, as we now know, with hindsight, the bringing in Southgate was that he was really, he'd worked with the players that he ultimately was selecting for the senior team from when they were very, very young. And so Carsley is clearly from, there's a lot of similarities there, isn't there? So we've seen that be successful. I don't necessarily think that we need to go out and get in a big name. You just want the person who can get the job done, and you want to see continuity. So if he can take effectively what will be an under-21s team and develop that with the existing senior players we've got as well, it could be good. Yeah, that's a good look to him.
Anyway, look, I did say that Terry can't be here today, but he did do something. Before he went away on holiday, he said, look, why don't I just have a chat with friend of the show, Archie Rinter, and he can tell us about all of his experiences over in Germany watching the football. To which I pointed out, well, actually, I went there. Why don't you just let me talk about it? And Terry said, well, no, let's have the opinions of someone that people want to listen to. So, which I didn't take personally, but...
I wouldn't.
No, I knew what he was going. So, shall we listen to it?
Yeah, let's do that.
Actually, I've already heard it. I'm going to go and have a cup of tea. But you knock yourself out there, Jan, and I think you'll get a lot out of this. So, here they are.
Welcome, Archie.
All right, mate.
How's it going?
Good.
basking in the considerable glow that the Euros have still given off here. People still yes. marching around in their pink Germany tops, which was so controversial before the Euros, but lots of people have bought them.
I was reading a piece in The Athletic about precisely that, and I think that's quite pleasing. I mean, are you being glib? I mean, is there any kind of discernible legacy to the Euros beyond pink jerseys and Major Tom?
I wouldn't read anything into my glib tone. I think it's something that the sound of football brings out of me. People are more positive than I was expecting them to be. And the people that I look at here are the ones around me who don't watch club football regularly. I remember listening to the kind of conversations they were having about the Euros before the tournament. And here I mean in my group of friends, but also I'm part of a choir. And perhaps unsurprisingly, there's not many football folk in my choir. And hearing them after the Euros talk about, oh yeah, I enjoyed watching Germany during that. I was thinking no one was saying this before the Euros. Watching Germany was a very unfashionable thing. And it's become a fashionable thing again. And I think that is a huge success for Julian Nagelsmann and the team and the German FA, the DFB, in turning around that mentality and making Germany cool again to Germans, because before March, it wasn't. Before those two friendlies against France and the Netherlands, there was a real struggle there to get people to buy into it. And now I still sense that there is this feeling and affinity to the national team again that hasn't been there for a while. Sure, you could point out how they played and this. They won games and they won comfortably. And actually, the first game against Scotland, I think they should be thanking their lucky stars that it was against Scotland and that they were able to smash a team out the park, because that gave this air of confidence again that, oh, we are quite good. And they didn't really do that to any other team again in the rest of the tournament. But just to hook people in again, that Scotland game was really important. And yeah, I do feel still, because it is a visual thing with the amount of shirts I see on a daily basis, that there's still some love hanging over for this German national team.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, in your choir, you know, as an England fan,
here we go.
You know, what particular songs do you sing as an England fan in your choir?
As an England fan, well, most of them are actually in English. Actually, I've got one next to me right now because the concert's coming up, and it's very appropriate to the Euros. Billie Eilish, I know Graham's a big fan of Billie Eilish, of course.
He's a massive Billie Eilish fan.
Everyone
knows this.
Can't get enough of her. When the party's over. Mm. So yeah. Mm.
As an England fan, you would have seen some England games. You're not a travelling fan. You are a guy who just happened to live in the tournament where England were playing and went along as a fan. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your experiences mixing with your kinfolk?
That's spot on. I only went because it was on my doorstep. And there's still the child, the teenager in me, who was definitely more of an England fan and wanted to marry that up with the 31-year-old version of me. And I have to say, there were moments I enjoyed. They were mainly moments of sportsmanship with opposition fans, actually. Exchanging Jaffa cakes with the Dutch fans in the car next to us coming out of the car park as a gesture of solidarity, because all of them were being so nice to us and offering us a handshake through the out the window. And so we felt like we should give something back. But that will stick with me. Walking through the back of the yellow wall, actually, in my friend and I were wearing England shirts. They were all coming up to us and going, oh, congratulations. Hope you do well in the final. Notice they said do well. they knew the realities of who we were playing.
We hope you don't embarrass yourself in the final.
Right. However, as you could probably tell by my tone, there's a big but coming here, and it's England fans themselves. I don't think, and I went to 5 England games, there was one game I went to where I didn't see a piece of needlessly aggressive behaviour that I experienced firsthand either towards me or towards someone else. And this ranged from the less serious end of the scale of somebody shouting out a car window at me in Gelsenkirchen saying, "Are you English or are you a Serb?" And I just kind of looked round and was like, "What?" To the more serious end of the scale, where at the final, I saw a guy who was wearing an England shirt get racially abused by an England fan. And I say wearing an England shirt because I went up to him to ask him what had gone on. This was at the start of the final because people wouldn't sit down in the block. And this guy, he told me, "I'm not English," but after he'd had this attack leveled at him, he just took off his shirt and he actually just threw it. He threw it away. That tells you a lot when these days as well about the kind of thing that's said when these shirts are not cheap.
Mm.
So the greater point here is I did not feel particularly comfortable being around loads of other England fans, because time and time again, something happened. And even en route to the final, a friend of ours, we were jammed into a tram, which is going to happen en route to a stadium. And there was this guy who was, very excited, I think is the most diplomatic way of putting it, and was slamming the top of the tram. And then with his other hand, he raised it to try and slam the top of the tram again. And he had a glass in his hand. And it just smashed over one of our friends' heads. And he got a cut. And you're just kind of thinking, I don't see other fans behaving like this. I don't hear other reports of this from people who went to games. And lots of my friends went to games and experienced things. And I do think there are good England fans, but it just seems that the percentage of our fans who are mindlessly aggressive is higher. And people will say, well, football's an adult environment. And I think it is, but I think that for the most part, when I go to football, and I'm fortunate enough to go to a lot of it, people are still able to behave themselves. In fact, I trust the guys with pyro to behave themselves better than some of these fellas, to be honest. As much as they're demonized, I think unfairly a lot of the time, I feel safer in that environment. So yeah, that was the not so good side. Going to games with friends was, and being able to watch England and celebrate with them was fun.
And England winning, I suppose, as well. Obviously, until the end. Over here, the narrative was England are playing generally very, very badly, but isn't it great that they're still winning? And towards the end, certainly with the Holland game, we got our heads around that, the fact that, well, this is just who England are, and if they're going to win, that's how they're going to win against Spain. But of course, I think all deep down realising that Spain were never going to let that happen, that they were totally turning up for this one.
Yeah.
What was the perception of your perception of watching England, you know, not watching ITV and BBC here in the UK? Were they frustrating to watch, or was it because you were at the games and they were just, you were a lot more engaged in the moment and in the atmosphere?
It made me think about how much football I watch these days is so highly choreographed and slick, and how well gelled together these teams are. And comparing that with Southgate's England and seeing how stodgy and jilted that they played throughout, I still felt that it could have been smoother. And you look at the four semi-finalists, Spain were the only good team, really. But again, that's because of what we watch throughout a season.
Mm.
I don't think this England team actually got along with each other as much as it's reported. I think there's a lot more PR present these days than there was in the generation of, say, Gerrard, Lampard, Owen, that those wheels weren't turning. You can bend the narrative more with social media now and give off a certain vibe. But what I saw on the pitch, where players were not passing to each other in good position, they would get killed for that by their managers at club level if they didn't play to the teammate in the right position. And I think that if Gareth Southgate wins, then he's a genius, he's a hero. But I just didn't think much of the way that England set up. And that's influenced by my time here in Germany as well, in the way that I've seen that they are very detailed in their approach and the concepts that they talk about football in, the way that in England we're just not. But as a fan, I still enjoyed the shithousery, you know, of winning games where probably didn't deserve to win them. And there is still a joy in that. So I think conflicted is probably the best way of putting it in terms of how I felt. I ran the full gamut of emotions. That's the right phrase. I've not used it in a while.
No, that is the correct phrase. Yeah, it is so funny following England, because you get so angry with them when you're watching them play. But then if they win, it's all evaporates. Mm. And you end up coming out of it feeling like a bit of a hypocrite, because I was sad when Gareth Southgate resigned. But at the same time, the amount of times during a game I had saying, this is rubbish and he should resign and he should do it right now, you know. And he's just thinking, well, that's not how I feel. That England seems to have a way of eliciting that level of hypocrisy from people, that it's no wonder we've all been driven half mad and can't control our emotions. And some of us can't handle our emotional maturity to the point where we end up misbehaving. We're being kind of gaslit.
Yeah.
I think you're right. In general, your point also about the way in which they play, I think that does stand to international football in general, in tournament football, because the amount of preparation time is such that the players can't be well drilled. Believe it or not, you'd think I'd be sick of it, but during the off-season, about a week ago, my TiVo box was full of episodes of the Bundesliga highlights from the Rückrunde, from the second half of the season. So I've been going through them. I'm just struck by just... And this is just not a good Bundesliga. This is just about league football in general, including the Premier League as well. Just how fluid and how coordinated club sides are by comparison to international teams. I know I'm watching highlight reels, so that does help. I'm not watching the crap passages of play. But you're thinking, these guys, you know, you're watching teams like Mainz when they're absolute rubbish, Bochum when they're rubbish, you know, and the way in which that they're able to put their combinations together. So many international teams with better players can't do that. And quite simply, it's because they don't have a season's worth to work together and a whole pre-season. And then, you know, I'm watching matches that are currently happening in late February. Those guys have been playing together since August, you know. So, yeah, they kind of get each other. And it does make sense it would be like that. But I like and appreciate that about international football. Yeah. I like the fact that it does have that element of chaos. But what we have learned, I think, is that if you can actually capture that club side coordination, then you'll go a very long way, especially if you've got Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams in your side.
Spain seemed to make the right amount of sacrifice. And that was my problem with the England team. They were trying to fit too many of the big... It felt like the biggest names started, if you look through the squad.
And they've done that for years, Archie. For a while, Gareth seems to have stopped doing that. But now he's like, I've got to play Jude. I have to play Phil Foden. And nobody seems to want to pass the ball to him, but I've got to play him.
I noticed that post-tournament, because you're happier with him, it's gone to Gareth. It's first name terms. If things are bad, it's Southgate.
Let's just switch tack then, and then spend the next few minutes just talking a little bit about the forthcoming Bundesliga season. And only a few minutes, because frankly, it is still early days. Let's just have a look at the title race and talk about Bayern Munich and Bayer Leverkusen, and just see what your feelings are on Leverkusen perhaps retaining the title or Bayern Munich regaining it.
As you say, a lot still to happen, mainly because Bayern have not shipped out the big names yet that are meant to take place as part of this summer upheaval that should be happening at the club. And by the big names, I mean one of, or if not a couple of, Joshua Kimmich, Serge Gnabry, Leon Goretzka, Matthijs de Ligt, potentially even Nusser Mazraoui. But especially if it's a couple of Kimmich, Goretzka and Gnabry, these are players who were seen as playing bigger roles at the club, but have not been able to do so to the standards that Bayern expect. And I think it would be a mistake to let Kimmich go, to be honest, if they are not going to use him at right back. But that's a completely different discussion. I think that Leverkusen will still have too much. I think that there's a lot to happen at Bayern and a lot to click from last season. And Vincent Kompany coming in, he will be learning on the job. There are certain things that he will not have encountered at Anderlecht or Burnley yet. And working at Bayern and with the pressure there, I think is something that both Thomas Tuchel and Julian Nagelsmann can testify to. It is a different world. And you see it with the way that Uli Hoeneß, a guy who technically doesn't have a senior role at the club anymore, even if he's on the board, he continues to just say what he thinks. And that is an issue for Bayern, because it weakens the people who should be making the decisions now and creates an even greater power vacuum in the future. And it makes the environment that the team has to play in now even harsher. That's one of the reasons, I think, for me, that Leverkusen were able to play the season they did last year, is because there was such serenity and calmness that Xabi Alonso gave, but also that you are going to get in Leverkusen as well. I don't see Dortmund challenging. I think that they have still got to work through some problems, and they have too much of an emphasis on identification when appointing coaches and members of their hierarchy instead of how well you can do the job. And by that I mean, by identification, people who have had success at the club before coming back. There's a lot of value placed on that in German football, and I think to a dangerous extent in Dortmund. And after that, Stuttgart have lost their star players, so can't see them kicking on. They'll be fun to watch in the Champions League, I think. Sebastian Hoeneß.
Three players so far, aren't they? If not
Anton.
More. Anton's gone. Gyurassi's gone.
Gyurassi.
Ito's gone.
Yep. To Bayern, and threatening that Führich will leave as well to somewhere. And I don't think RB Leipzig are going to be in that contention. I think Leverkusen will have less points than last season. Bayern will have around about the same. But I think Leverkusen are still to be fancied at this stage.
At this stage, yeah. I think a little bit depends on whether or not Jonathan Tah stays at the club.
He was my big question mark.
Yeah.
Yes.
And whether he goes to Bayern, which seems to have gone a little bit cold at the moment. I think Bayern can be very excited by the addition of Olise from Crystal Palace, but Palace to Bayern is a big step up as well in itself. He's going to need a bit of time to settle in. I think you're right about Dortmund. I won't say much more than that. I'm very excited. I'm very excited to see Gyurassi.
If only people could see the look of resignation.
I'm very excited to see Gyurassi and Anton at the club, and I'm very pleased that Nuri Sahin is back. But I'm very pleased in a romantic Dortmund fan who's written a history of the club, and I think understands as much as it's possible for me to do the character of that club. Whether or not that actually translates into results and ambition is a secondary concern to me, and I probably that's not a common view, I think, amongst a lot of Dortmund fans who I think are driven a lot more by results and outcomes than anything else. But anyway, I just wanted to have a few words about the profile of this Bundesliga. We've got quite a few teams now who are not what you would characterise as traditional clubs, in the sense that they're not the old school, extremely well supported, often nationally, sometimes internationally supported clubs. You know, clubs like Leipzig, Augsburg, Heidenheim, Hoffenheim. We have got the two cult clubs in St. Pauli and Union Berlin. But have you thought about that? And if you have, is that telling you anything about, you know, the character and nature of the Bundesliga and whether or not it's still as appealing? Obviously, as ESPN anchor for the Bundesliga coverage, it's the best league in the world. But for a moment, imagine that that's not what you are, and take that hat off. Is that, what is that telling you about the way the Bundesliga shapes up now, and by comparison to, say, when you first got into it?
Well, we've spoken about Billie Eilish you know, one of Graham's favourites. And I'm sure that Jan back in the day was also a big Sum 41 fan. Because in this sense, I am in too deep when it comes to trying to look about how unattractive it is, because it is my job to get excited about these things. But also, just naturally, it happens. I didn't expect to be as excited as I became about Heidenheim last season. And then I went there and I said, oh, you got to go to Heidenheim. What a place. This is a club that only scout in Germany and Austria and German-speaking places. And they finished top half last season against clubs who are so much bigger than them. And I think that's the trend that you're getting at here, in that the Bundesliga has, outside of the top places, it's been shaped in the last few years more by well-run, less traditional clubs. But I guess it depends who you're talking to. Are we talking to people who want to buy into the league? Because if you're buying into the league, then yeah, you do want to see some of the likes of Kaiserslautern, Hamburg, Cologne, Schalke, Nuremberg, Hertha in the top division again, because it's not so long ago that they were there. I miss them, but I also kind of enjoy just having them there to watch in the second division, because I think it makes it an all the more watchable. It is amazing how they still are able to pull in full houses at these places. And the real takeaway is that as much as there are these fickler fans, I'm pretty sure fickler was a striker, footnote, wasn't it?
Horst Fickler, wasn't it?
Horst Fickler,
played for Ulm in the 1980s, isn't
it? Spot on. There's this, the fickler fans will look and be like, okay, give me the title race at the top. But then again, they're there for your fast food. And I'm saying, hey, come spend the evening. Come have the 7-course meal. Bundesliga is not really a 7-course meal. It's more a schnitzel and a lot of beer. But come join us for the evening and revel in what there is in the rest of the division, but also in the rest of German football, because there is a lot to be enjoyed there. In truth, yes, people want fast food. And that's the bigger problem of trying to, for the Bundesliga to hold its line and say, we're not going to go for the money, money, money glamour. We're going to stay ourselves and hope that people come to us. Mm. And that's the battle that is being still fought from within regarding fan ownership and 50+1 that will continue. And that is interesting enough for the storyline for me. If you watch German football, you're watching the live battle for football's soul. It's gone in England. It's happened. It's over. I know that from trying to fight such causes for Fulham fans. But in Germany, they still believe. And seeing how they're able to do that against forces that will still come and try and persuade them that this lovely barrel of snake oil could be for you, they still know that, no, we're going to stand firm. And in that way, I think the Bundesliga's attractiveness will still be there in the years to come, because I don't think things are reversing in any direction from the other way of doing things, shall we say.
I think the worry is that traditional clubs, with so many of them being in the lower tier, their fan bases will be not in such a strong position to be able to resist and protest against future changes, unwelcome changes to the way that the Bundesliga or the DFL is run or governed, or indeed any changes in rules, because, you know, the second division doesn't have the same profile that the first division has. And, you know, the successful protests against the investors was largely down to the fact that the club supporters from the traditional clubs were in a position to raise hell and people to take notice. They're not going to do that in the Bundesliga too. So it does behoove those clubs to get their acts together and get their teams back into the Bundesliga so that we can enjoy, one, football with these magnificent backdrops, but also to, you know, help to preserve 50+1 for as long as people want it to be preserved. Archie, thank you very much indeed for joining us. American listeners will know you, I should think, if they watch the Bundesliga and they've got an ESPN subscription. But if they don't, then you will be able to, I assume you'll still be, I don't know, unless you've been fired, I assume that you still will be doing the ESPN's coverage of the Bundesliga next season.
If I've been fired, I'm in real trouble.
It won't be because of this interview.
I'm in real trouble. You can find me still on Twitter and pondering whether I should still be using Twitter at ArchieRT1. Terry was the man who made me change my handle all those years ago, you might remember.
I do remember.
It wasn't snappy.
Didn't roll off the tongue.
Terry's my commercial friend. He's puffing on the cigar going, "This is what you need to do, kid."
That's exactly how it goes down. That's exactly how it goes down. I just have lost the cigar recently. That's all, sadly. All right, then. Archie Rintat, Horst Fickler's number one fan.
Love Horst Fickler.
Thanks very much for being on The Sound of Football, and see you again.
Thanks. Cheers, pal.
It's always good to have Archie on the show, isn't it?
He's always welcome here. Always got some interesting things to say.
Yeah, very interesting thing. So I really did enjoy his stuff about going to watch England. I only went to see England once, and that was enough for me. So for him to go quite a few times and to be at the final as well, I don't think I would have gone to the final, even if I had the opportunity, because I would have thought, not really. I know the sort of guys who are going to be there. And really, over the last couple of weeks, with the trouble that we've had over here in England, it's not surprising there is some overlap there between the sort of guys that were just unable to control themselves, not causing trouble, but unable to control themselves over there. And then once you get them back over here and you give them a made up reason to be absolutely livid about something, that they go ahead and start acting like utter arseholes.
There was some concern actually ahead of the football kicking off in the EFL that there may be some, as you mentioned, crossover and some issues with that, which didn't materialise, which was good to see, because I think we had all had enough of that, hadn't we?
Yeah. Great to hear from Archie, and I think we'll have to try and get him on again soon.
Absolutely.
To talk about that. But I thought it was very interesting what you were saying about the season ahead in Germany. I'm not too sure about how Vincent Kompany's going to do as Bayern coach. As Archie said, nothing has changed at that club, really. It's still the same in the background. So, I don't know. It's almost like he's being set up for a fall, I think.
Yeah, and he's gone there as well off the back of a relegation in the Premier League. I don't doubt Kompany's ability as a coach. The Bayern squad are going to be clearly much stronger than the squad he had at Burnley. But it did seem like a strange appointment. But, you know, good luck to him. He's one of the nicest guys in football, isn't he? So
yeah,
you kind of, you want him to do well. But you're right. If the foundations are rocky, then he's going to struggle like everybody else did.
Yeah. Well, the Germans don't even kick off for another week. Those lazy, lazy Germans.
Yes.
They're raising their traditional curtain this weekend because it's the Super Cup. So Leverkusen are playing Stuttgart. And that's one of the games that will be in our box set this weekend. Now, new listeners, every week we do a newsletter, an email newsletter called The Weekend Box Set. It's on Substack, but knowing what Substack's search engine's like, you probably can't find it. So go along to our website, sofpodcast.com. And then you'll see links for the weekend box set, and that will tell you all about it. And then you'll be able to read old issues of it as well. And what it is, it's basically us doing previews of 7 games that we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. So it comes in and weighs in about 2,000 words. And 7 previews of games. Lots of predictions and little tidbits of news from the best games across Europe. Premier League, Championship, Liga, Serie A, La Liga, Bundesliga. We might even chuck some MLS stuff in there occasionally. And if we can get Gary involved, he might chuck in some A-League stuff as well. Yeah, absolutely anything. If it's a decent football match, it's going in. And that's why the Super Cup is going in there this week. It is going to be quite Premier League heavy box set this week, but we have got a Championship game in there. We've got Sunderland's game. Who are they? Oh, Sheffield Wednesday, isn't it? They've got this weekend. You're going to get bored of Sunderland being on the telly, I think, Jan, because I was just having a look. And with the League Cup, I think they're already scheduled to be on telly 15 times before the midpoint of the season.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of this is to do with Sky's new deal with the EFL. In September, I think we're on the telly once, but then in October, we're on 4 times. 3 in November and I think 3 or 4 again in December. So, I mean, for me, it's great, you know, for the Sunderland supporters that are going to away games for that, because they're going to be, obviously they can't be on at Saturday 3. So there's going to be some early mornings and late nights, I would imagine, for them. But from my point of view, it's all good. It is all good. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And speaking of which, Graham, their first match of the season against Cardiff was on, and a fine performance. It was the first competitive match in charge for Regis Labrys, who has been christened by the locals as Reggie. Which I'm sure he loves, who is a coach that was with Lorient. He got them to 10th and got them relegated, but I think there was some, there was a lot of the players got sold. Not necessarily all his fault, but anyway, he's come in and brought in what clearly is a different mentality. He had a great pre-season and we played very, very well against Cardiff, and we were worthy winners. So yeah, it's really good. And it coincides as well with a real kind of enthusiasm and positivity around the club. The marketing guys there have released two new kits. One is they're both Hummel kits, which was quite a fan favourite in the late 80s when Gabbiadini was around. And then the away kit is this very similar to the one that Sunderland won at the at the 92 Cup final against Liverpool, the white one with kind of like navy shoulders on them. So they sold 25,000 of the home shirt. People are going crazy for it, which is great. So there's a lot of positivity around. It was a great performance, and it will be, hopefully we can carry that through against Sheffield Wednesday, who had a spanking win in their first match of the season against Wayne Rooney's Plymouth, where they put 4 past them. So they're clearly on form, or are Plymouth just rubbish? I don't know, but I'm sure we'll find out in due course.
I'm going with rubbish.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, of course, hostage to fortune and all that, because by the time this comes out, I think Sunderland will have kicked off against Preston in the EFL Cup. So I think that's tomorrow night, isn't it? I think
it is tomorrow night. So that's another tough one. The second of 3 times we're on the telly in 7 days.
Yes. Yes.
It's crazy.
Look at he's loving it. Oh, dear. That's almost as much as Arsenal. Oh, dear.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, there is, of course, a full card of Premier League games on as well this weekend. And we're going to be covering 4 in the box set, including Chelsea versus Man City. Now, they were a couple of stonking games in the Premier League last season. Absolutely amazing. And to have one of those on the opening weekend, that's going to be a cracker, isn't it? Really is.
Well, yes, I think it will be. Of course, Chelsea have got a new coach, Enzo Maresca. So it'll be interesting to see how he's going to set Chelsea up against City. So, yeah, that's a cracking opening day fixture. I really hope that they both just go for it, which, as you said, based on last season, looks like it's on the cards.
Yeah, and the bookies can't seem to make their mind up about City, can they, this season? They put them up there as favourites to win the title. Obvs. You know, they keep winning it. Yeah. They've won it for the last 4 years, haven't they? So yeah, why not? But, yeah, they're also there or thereabouts in the relegation betting as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, which is strange. So just put this in context. So Arsenal and Liverpool are, across most markets, like 1,000 or 2,000 to 1 to be relegated, right? So it's clearly not going to happen. And then you've got current Premier League champions, Manchester City, between 14 and 16 to 1.
Mm.
14 and 16 to 1. And just to put that in some context for you, either side of them, you look at someone like Crystal Palace, who finished very well last season, they're 10 to 1, okay? And you look at Brighton, they're about 16 to 1. So Man City are sitting in between the two of those to be relegated. Now, what do these guys know, Graham, that we don't know?
Well, maybe they're just hedging their bets. 14 to 1, that's still very, very, very unlikely. But yeah, they obviously are protecting themselves just in case something very, very, very radical happens this season, which, of course, you know, none of us would want to see, would we?
I think it would be terrible for the sport in general if they went right. Yeah, and hang on, that's not what I think. That's not what I think at all. I think it would be wonderful. Yeah, of course, they're waiting for the Premier League investigation into the alleged financial shenanigans by Manchester City. So, but I thought that was quite interesting. And you're right, they've got to hedge their bets and make sure they don't get cleaned out. But, you know, it looks like that's coming this season for them to react like that. But yeah, it would be wonderful, wouldn't it? Funny, very, very funny.
Well, if you want to read what we think about the seven games that we will be watching from Friday to Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe. Subscribe to it, and it will be in your inbox every Friday lunchtime. And it'll be a cracking read, and you'll be able to go home and say, these are the games I want to watch, when your significant other will look at you and say, you're not watching football all weekend. But hey, it's a starting point, because we'll give you lots and lots of reasons why you should be watching games like Ipswich Town versus Liverpool, Ipswich Town back in the Premier League, or West Ham United versus Aston Villa, Julian Lopetegui back in the Premier League, two former managers of Sevilla playing against each other. Oh, who wouldn't want to watch that?
Exactly.
Then there's late on Sunday night, you've got Real Mallorca versus Real Madrid. Kylian Mbappe turning out for Madrid.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah. So finally get to see how they're going to line up. Well, of course we know how they're going to line up. They're just going to put all the players on. He's going to put all the good players on the pitch, Carlo Ancelotti, and say, go out there and do some goals. And they will.
They've got to be unstoppable this season, haven't they? With Vinny Jr., Bellingham, and Mbappe.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's just three of them. The rest of them are all amazing as well. So, yeah, I think before balls kicked, La Liga has already been decided.
Yeah, that's already been decided. I think the Premier League's already been decided as well. In fact, everything's been decided already. Why on earth do we go through the whole rigmarole of playing football anyway? Maybe things will be different this year. That's what we all hope anyway. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, from Terry DeFillon, and from Archie Winter, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Horst Fickler.